The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter. And the first article, which comes from the Harvard Heart Letter of October 2023, is entitled, Is Sex Hormone Therapy Safe for Your Heart? New evidence provides some clarity on the long controversial practice of sex hormone use in both men and women. The two main sex hormones, estrogen and testosterone, have wide-ranging effects in the body, including on the cardiovascular system, produced primarily by the ovaries, estrogen, and testes, testosterone. These hormones affect not just your sexual function, but also blood pressure, cholesterol, and other factors that influence heart health. As people age, the natural decline in sex hormone levels sometimes causes undesirable symptoms like hot flashes or a flagging sex drive. Doctors can prescribe pills, patches, gels, and creams containing estrogen or testosterone to ease those symptoms. But are these products safe for your heart? Some studies have suggested protective effects, while others have reported dangers to the cardiovascular system. But there's been far more research on estrogen, which is often given in combination with progesterone, another sex hormone. In fact, there were no long-term findings on testosterone therapy in men until this year. Here's a quick review of the current evidence on this topic. When men reach their mid-20s, their testosterone levels start to fall. The term andropause, which refers to this age-related hormone drop, was coined back in the 1930s. But the push to treat the phenomenon is far more recent. In the early 2000s, direct-to-consumer advertisements suggested that low testosterone could make men feel tired, dull, and depressed, and that testosterone therapy could restore their energy, alertness, and sexual function. This marketing trend, along with the release of an easy-to-use gel formulation of the drug, led to a sharp rise in testosterone prescriptions. According to the American Urologic Association, testosterone therapy is recommended only for men with low blood testosterone levels, defined as less than 300 nanograms per deciliter, and symptoms which might include loss of muscle mass, sleep problems, and a reduced sex drive. Yet up to a quarter of men don't have their testosterone levels checked before starting treatment. And of those who do, nearly half don't get rechecked once they start, according to the AUA, which recommends stopping the therapy if symptoms don't improve. Several observational studies found a possible increased risk of heart-related problems from testosterone therapy in older men. In 2014, the FDA issued a warning cautioning against the practice. But the latest research offers some reassurance about testosterone's cardiovascular safety. According to Harvard Medical School professor Dr. Arya Olumi, chief of urologic surgery at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, published July 2023 in the New England Journal of Medicine, the study included more than 5,200 men who were at high risk for cardiovascular problems and had low testosterone levels. Over a follow-up period, averaging about 2 years, men using testosterone were no more likely to have serious heart-related problems than those using a placebo. Still, it's worth noting that about two-thirds of the men in both studies dropped out of the study. Plus, the report did not include information about whether testosterone therapy improved any symptoms related to low testosterone. Dr. Olimbi notes, I see men who have been prescribed testosterone by another physician and have continued taking it for years, but they admit that they're not really sure it's doing anything for them. What's more, many men have low testosterone levels and feel perfectly fine. For men with low testosterone and related symptoms, it's now considered safe to try testosterone. But if you don't feel better after 6 months, there's no reason to keep taking it, says Dr. Olumi. In contrast to the gradual decline in hormone levels men experience, hormone levels drop rather abruptly when women reach their late 40s and early 50s. About 75% of women say they experience symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats around the time of menopause. Some have only mild occasional symptoms, but others are so uncomfortable and debilitated that what they experience impairs their sleep, their mood, and their day-to-day function. Hormone therapy can ease menopausal symptoms, but lingering concern about possible heart-related risks, documented in a major trial published in 2002, has left some doctors reluctant to prescribe the therapy. It's a conundrum that comes up fairly often because all women go through menopause, says Dr. Emily Lau, a cardiologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, who specializes in women's cardiovascular health. Research over the past two decades has painted a clearer picture of the cardiovascular risk, which depends on the timing and type of hormone therapy a woman takes, as well as her own underlying risk of heart disease. First, women shouldn't start taking systemic hormone therapy in pill or patch form after age 60, or more than 10 years after menopause begins. Women should use the lowest possible dose of hormones to ease their bothersome symptoms, and ideally reevaluate the need for therapy every year. According to Dr. Lau, who co-authored an in-depth article about menopausal hormone therapy in the February 2023 issue of Circulation. For healthy women with a low 10-year heart disease risk, all forms of hormone therapy are acceptable. But for those with a risk of 5 to 10%, experts recommend transdermal patches, which are less likely to trigger blood clots than hormones taken in pill form. Women at high risk, in other words, a risk greater than 10%, should avoid systemic hormone therapy if possible. And if you want to calculate your 10-year risk, you can go to www.health.harvard.edu/heart risk. A new non-hormonal drug called fezolinetant, or Veozah, for treating hot flashes and night sweats could be a good alternative. It's worth noting that vaginal estrogen products like creams, suppositories, and rings, which can relieve vaginal dryness and discomfort during sex, do not appear to be linked to any increased heart risk. Now we're going to stay with the Harvard Heart Letter of October 2023. And here's an article called Ask the Doctor with Dr. Christopher Cannon, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. Question. I'm a 73-year-old man with heart disease. I had a coronary artery bypass when I was 45. I pay close attention to my health and exercise regularly. Recently, I went to the emergency room with chest pain. Although my electrocardiogram and stress echocardiogram showed no problems, my troponin was elevated, ranging from 57 to 63 on several repeated tests. Should I worry about the elevated troponin? And here's what Dr. Cannon says. Troponins, which are proteins involved in muscle contraction, are found almost exclusively in the heart and skeletal muscle cells. During a heart attack, reduced blood flow damages part of the heart muscle, which then releases troponins into the bloodstream. That's why emergency room physicians routinely check blood troponin levels in people with suspected heart attacks. The original tests detect the troponins that are unique to heart cells, including two subtypes of the protein, troponin T and troponin I. Newer versions of the test detect very small amounts of troponin in concentrations that are 10 to 100 times more sensitive than the original test. These are called high sensitivity troponin tests, and they can detect heart attacks earlier and more accurately. A normal range differs for each type and brand of test. In general, the normal range for women is 0 to 10 nanograms per liter, and for men, it's 0 to 14. When a person has heart attack symptoms, troponin tests are usually done twice in the first few hours, and often several more times over the following 24 hours, depending on the findings. To diagnose a heart attack, clinicians consider the troponin values and electrocardiogram findings, along with a person's current symptoms and history of heart-related problems. With a minor heart attack, troponin levels can rise 2 to 3 times the upper limits of normal, but can go as high as 500 nanograms per liter with a major heart attack. The values usually rise over a 24-hour period and slowly fall. Many other conditions can cause elevated troponin, like myocarditis, which is the inflammation of the heart muscle, cardiomyopathy, or heart muscle disease, and chronic kidney disease. Prolonged exercise can also raise troponin, but usually only in athletes training for marathons or triathlons. Sometimes people have elevated levels without a clear cause. In such a situation, which may be the case for you, the troponin level remains fairly constant. Your doctor likely suspected this was the case, but ordered the stress echocardiogram to check for any area of decreased blood flow in your heart. Your troponin may simply be naturally higher than the average person's, but there's nothing anyone can do to lower their troponin level. You can now just continue maintaining your healthy lifestyle. Now, here's a very important subject, again in the Harvard Heart Letter of October 2023. It's called A Closer Look at Alcohol's Effect on Heart Health. Could stress relief and lower risk of diabetes explain the link between moderate drinking and cardiovascular health? Along with many major health organizations, the American Heart Association warns about the dangers of excessive drinking, which can contribute to high blood pressure, obesity, and stroke. It also discourages people from drinking alcohol to improve their health, although the AHA maintains that moderate drinking, no more than one drink per day for women and 2 drinks or fewer for men, is acceptable. This complex advice stems from conflicting studies about the health effects of light to moderate alcohol consumption. While some research focusing on inherited factors has hinted that even light drinking may be harmful, other studies have looked for mechanisms through which moderate drinking could be beneficial. Limited evidence suggests that alcohol may raise the HDL, or good cholesterol, boost antioxidant levels, or enhance blood flow, but none of these explanations have proved very convincing. A recent report raised another possibility: alcohol may reduce stress. A study published in the June 20th, 2023 Journal of the American College of Cardiology found that brain scans of people who reported light to moderate drinking showed less activity in the part of the brain that responds to stress compared with the scans of people who abstained or drank very little. Stress not only raises blood pressure and heart rate, but also triggers inflammation that causes plaque buildup, which contributes to heart attacks. The finding is limited by the fact that the brain scans were commonly done for cancer surveillance or cancer diagnosis, says Dr. Ken Muckamal, an internist at the Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, who studies how alcohol and other lifestyle factors affect health. The stress level of someone in the midst of a cancer workup is likely quite high and may not reflect the typical stress level of the average person. Still, he says, it's an intriguing finding that merits further study. In the moment, alcohol can help people feel relaxed, and that's especially true when people drink in social situations. It's possible that light to moderate drinkers have stronger social ties, which in turn provides resilience against stress. The study authors are now focusing on other interventions, like meditation or exercise, that might lower the brain's stress activity without the potentially harmful effects of alcohol. How is drinking related to diabetes? A 2022 study showed a link between moderate drinking, 8 to 16 drinks per week, and a lower risk of type 2 diabetes, but specifically among people who drank alcohol with meals. Many short-term trials that randomly assign people to drink either alcohol or a non-alcoholic beverage show lower blood sugar levels and better insulin sensitivity among people who drink moderate amounts of alcohol. While these biomarkers aren't a perfect representation of diabetes risk, they're pretty close, says Dr. Muckamal. People with diabetes are twice as likely to have heart disease as people without the condition. But again, sticking to moderate intake is important. If you drink alcohol, enjoy it with a meal, which will slow down the absorption of alcohol into your bloodstream. Because alcohol is high in calories, drinking excessive amounts can lead to weight gain, which raises the risk of diabetes. Now, here's another interesting article in the Harvard Heart Letter of October 2023, and it's entitled, Low-Dose Aspirin is Linked to Anemia. Often taken to stave off heart attacks, aspirin may lead to subtle, unrecognized internal bleeding in older adults. Although daily low-dose aspirin can help prevent heart attacks, this widely used drug comes with the downside, an increased risk of bleeding. This ranges from minor problems to more serious but rare complications like bleeding in the brain. New research now finds older people who take low-dose aspirin every day are more likely to develop anemia, a condition marked by reduced amount of red blood cells. The findings are yet another reminder to be cautious about daily aspirin use. Although half of older adults say they take low-dose aspirin, current guidelines recommend this practice only for people who have coronary artery disease or another vascular disease, and for those who are under 70 and at high risk of heart attack. We can't talk about all the good that aspirin does without mentioning the potential harm, says cardiologist Dr. Gregory Piazza, associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Decades ago, doctors recommended low-dose aspirin for most men over 50, but that's no longer the case. Unless you have diagnosed cardiovascular disease, the risk of bleeding likely outweighs the drug's heart-protecting benefits, as several recent large studies comparing aspirin to placebo have shown. One of those studies was the ASPREE study, A-S-P-R-E-E, which followed 19,000 initially healthy adults over the age of 70 for 5 years. In these people, low-dose aspirin did not protect against heart attack or stroke, but it did raise the risk of major bleeding, especially in the stomach and brain, by 30%. Aspirin may also cause subtle, undetected internal bleeding that leads to anemia, based on a new analysis of the ASPREE data that looked at participants' hemoglobin and ferritin levels, which were measured yearly. Hemoglobin carries oxygen in the blood. Ferritin helps store iron in your body. Anemia is defined as having a hemoglobin level of less than 12 for men and less than 11 for women. This new analysis, published in the July 2023 journal entitled The Annals of Internal Medicine, found that people who took aspirin were 20% more likely to have anemia compared with those not taking the drug. Although mild cases of anemia might not cause any symptoms, the condition can lead to fatigue, weakness, shortness of breath, and dizziness, all of which result from the diminished oxygen levels in the body. Aspirin discourages blood clots by preventing tiny cell fragments in the blood, called platelets, from clumping together. But the drug also blocks substances that help maintain and protect the delicate tissue lining the gastrointestinal tract. Long-term aspirin can damage this protective layer, making bleeding more likely, says Dr. Piazza. Doctors refer to small amounts of bleeding as occult bleeding, since it often remains hidden and unrecognized. This minor bleeding can occur in the stomach or farther down the gastrointestinal tract. If you have any sort of breach in this pathway, like a hemorrhoid or a tiny colon polyp, taking daily aspirin can make it more likely to bleed. In fact, this phenomenon may explain why aspirin use has been linked to lower risk of death from colon cancer. Aspirin may reveal the cancer by causing a cancerous polyp to bleed and show up as blood in a person's stool. The resulting earlier diagnosis and treatment may extend survival, Dr. Piazza explains. If you're currently taking low-dose aspirin, check with your doctor to make sure it makes sense for you. With my patients, we review all medicines at every visit, Dr. Piazza says. People may have taken aspirin for years, but since bleeding risk rises with age, it might be time for them to stop, or they may have started taking a different, more powerful clot-preventing medication that renders the aspirin unnecessary. A common example is clopidogrel or Plavix, which is often prescribed after a person gets an artery-opening stent. If your doctor recommends low-dose aspirin, make sure you get an annual blood test that checks your hemoglobin levels. It's commonly done as part of an annual physical, but for heart disease prevention, doctors tend to focus on cholesterol and blood sugar and may pay less attention to hemoglobin levels, says Dr. Piazza. Now we're going to turn to some shorter articles in the Harvard Heart Letter of October 2023. And the first is, Statin Alternative Lowers Health-Related Deaths. This is from Research We're Watching. For people who can't take statin drugs, a cholesterol-lowering drug called bempedoic acid, or Nexletol, can also lower the risk of heart attacks and related problems. Published July 11, 2023, in JAMA, the study included 4,200 people with high LDL, or bad cholesterol, who couldn't take statins because of side effects. Their average age was 68, and about two-thirds had diabetes. Participants were randomly assigned to take either bempedoic acid or a placebo. Over a follow-up period of 40 months, those taking the drug were 30% less likely to die of a heart-related condition, have a heart attack or stroke, or need an artery-opening stent, compared with people who took placebos. Bempedoic acid reduced LDL levels by 21%. About 5 to 10% of people who try statins have to stop taking them, usually because of muscle-related symptoms. This problem is less likely with bempedoic acid, although the drug has other side effects, including a slightly increased risk of gout and of gallstones. Still, bempedoic acid can be a good alternative for people at high risk of heart disease who can't take statins. And now here's another interesting short article from Research We're Watching. Weather and air pollution is linked to heart-related hospitalizations. A model that takes weather and air pollution into account may help forecast future heart problems. According to a study in the June 2023 issue of JACC Advances, to create the model, researchers looked at atmospheric and weather data in tandem with hospital admissions for heart failure, heart attack, and stroke over a 10-year period. They analyzed data on more than 24 million Canadians, divided into five progressive age groups, ranging from age 18 to over 70. Lower temperatures, high wind speed, atmospheric pressure, high precipitation, and high degrees of pollution were all linked to a high risk of being hospitalized with one of the serious cardiovascular conditions, particularly in old people. According to the authors, the environmental factors they identified could one day be used to help predict the incidence of cardiovascular problems, enabling better planning during high-risk periods. In addition, people could be advised to avoid going outside and be extra careful during times of unfavorable weather. And very briefly, they also mentioned that there's a nasal spray now which slows heart rhythm. A nasal spray containing the experimental drug etripamil can quickly and effectively treat an abnormally fast heart rhythm called SVT, according to a new study. Caused by an electric misfire that overrides the heart's natural pacemaker, SVT can lead to heart rates as high as 180 to 200. And in the study, which included 184 people, they found that when the etripamil spray was used at home, it was twice as effective as placebo spray in restoring SVT back to normal heart rhythm. The drug is going to be submitted for FDA approval in late 2023. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.